Hi, I'm Alan Brady. You remember me from the Alan Brady Show.
Yes, if Alan needs any help.
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.
Shut up, Mel.
Shut up, Mel.
Yes, sir.
I had the best TV writers on my show. Rob Petrie. Sally Rogers.
Hey, I got it. Don't anybody move.
And Buddy Sorrell.
Well, you moved. I forgot it.
The legendary Carl Reiner has been at the center of...
Scott, before you say,
yes,
Dave, I'd like to tell you something.
Yes, sir.
Shut up, Dave. That's Alan Brady talking, not
I
Carl.
Love that. I love that. All right, it's Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. That was, of course, the legendary Carl Reiner interrupting my introduction just to tell me to shut up, which he used to do on the Dick Van Dyke Show. So classic. It's a time of year where we talk about the best and worst of everything of the year, and this year's pretty much been the worst in so many ways, but it also is a time we remember and reflect on those familiar faces we lost over the past year. Now, some are very familiar, some you may not know, but wish you had. Joining me live on the Team Hopper phone line, and this is our eighth year, I think, doing this, as media historian and co-author of the book Watching TV, my pal Wally Podrazik. Wally, welcome in.
Why? Good to be here, David.
You know, there are so many to talk about, so we're going to go over some in detail, and some we're going to kind of pass through a little bit from television, the movies, music, sports, and those who otherwise impacted our lives. But I want to start with Carl Reiner. I interviewed him 7 times over the last 6 years, including literally last spring, just months before he passed. We actually talked about planning his 100th birthday. And, you know, he was a guy that was, he had a zest for life. He was 98 years old and he did not want to go. He wanted to keep moving. Here's a little sample of Carl and I when I asked him in an interview how the Dick Van Dyke Show came together. So late 50s, we're talking about 1959, you produced and wrote a TV pilot called Head of the Family based on your life on your show or shows while you were on vacation one summer.
Yeah, I was asked to do a show, and somebody said, and I said to myself, what do I know about? And I on this West Side Drive going home, I said, nobody's different. Everybody has the same guys who are married, you know, and
yep.
They got the same life. And I said, well, what do I do? I said, well, I'm a writer on the actor on the show. And I live in New Rochelle. I have a wife and 2 kids. I said, I'll write about that. And I wrote a thing called Head of the Family. Peter Lawford picked up the money for the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
We did a pilot with Barbara Britton.
Right.
And a couple other people. And it didn't sell. I was okay, but I was not good enough. So I felt badly because I had... written, knowing I was going to be in it, I had written 13 episodes
sure.
already to go. And I said, this is crazy. My agent said, they couldn't believe that these episodes are not going to be ever seen.
Yeah.
So we got the idea to find another actor. And somebody said, Dick Van Dyke. I didn't know who he was. I went to New York and saw him and Bye Bye Birdie with Cheetah Rivera.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, they're maybe the most talented human being that ever lived.
Yeah.
And we hired him. And the rest, of course, is wonderful history.
Wally, Carl was not only, you know, big, obviously, in television with Dick Van Dyke and so many others, but he was also so integral in Steve Martin's career. I mean, directing and producing a lot of his movies as well. He was in all the Ocean's 11. He just never stopped working, but honestly, one of the biggest legends in comedy dating back to 1950.
And could I jump in with my own? I can't match you for the number of times I spoke with Carl Reiner. I just had one very nice, about a 10-minute at a press event. But it was a one-on-one. And a couple things struck me. One was his longevity, of course, his enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And the fact that he loved Mel Brooks.
Oh, they're best friends.
I mean, he was interested in promoting what was then Brooks's latest project, a stage adaptation of Young Frankenstein, as he was about talking about his own career. And one more footnote. You said I'm co-author of the book Watching TV. One of the requirements when we requested way, way back at the original edition of the book to get permission to use the photos was we had to send the manuscript about what we were saying about the Dick Van Dyke Show for Carl's approval. Thank God he approved it.
Yeah, very nice. Wow, what a great story. Well, you know, too, when you talk about Mel Brooks and Carl, they were best friends until even through COVID, because both their wives passed on. Mel would go over to Carl's house for dinner every night. They would watch Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. And actually, the night Carl died, they had dinner together. And he went home, and he went to go to his bedroom, and he passed on. So the great Carl Reiner, of course. Now, before we dig in any further, Wally, the biggest impact really that we have to talk about in 2020 are those we lost from COVID-19. Nearly, 300,000 people in the United States. Nearly 1.6 million worldwide. Those are the true people, faces that you might not know, faces that might have impacted you in your life that you did know, parents, family, friends, but those who have dealt with this pandemic in such a way and lost their lives, I think, have to be reflected upon.
Yeah, I mean, in effect, a tip of the hat and empathy and sympathy to all. I mean, you and I, I'm sure, can make our own little short list of those that we know directly that had someone that they lost. And one of the reasons that I think that we, over the years, have enjoyed looking at the celebrity deaths is not just stargazing, but this is a time for us to kind of rally around those faces that we all know.
Right.
So you could take your general feeling of sadness and loss and look at, we know these people, not necessarily personally, but we know them within our artistic lives or within our social lives or within our political lives, and we respect them. And so in a way, what we're doing is, basically celebrating their wonderful lives. Because I was looking at a chart of a lot of the people that passed, the celebs and all. We're talking a couple dozen in their 90s, high as 104 with
Olivia
de Havilland, 103 with Kirk Douglas, 101 with Katherine Johnson. There were some long-lived careers that we respect and appreciate.
Well, and here's the other thing, and I'm going to digress for a minute. We don't have to talk deeply about this, but Time Magazine put out their Person of the Year. To me, it should have been the doctors, the nurses, frontline workers, and quite frankly, our first responders who have been in the forefront, who've gone to work every day and done their job while we're sitting, pantsless with our dress shirts on Zoom, doing our work. They're out there doing that. They should have been on the front cover. And no disrespect to the president-elect and vice president-elect, but you know what? They haven't done anything yet. They won. That's all they did is win. These are the people that really should have been the persons of the year. A couple other really big notables, obviously Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, and I had the opportunity. I was stage managing an event a few years back. It was actually an event focused around Theo Bacall. But you could see that the presence that she brought, and she just visited before the event started, spent a few minutes with Theo. And it's like you want to be your best in her presence. She had that kind of aura about her. Basically, she inspired aspiration. And if you saw the film RBG, you could see why she was a hero, certainly to young women, but just basically people in general. Heck, I wanted to go into a more rigorous athletic exercise campaign after seeing her.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. John Lewis.
Again, civil rights activist. I think he talked about the importance of getting into good trouble, trouble that made a difference, trouble that you should get into because there were important things to do.
Joseph Laurie and, of course, Katherine Johnson on that list as well. We're going to we're talking to Wally Podrazik. We're talking about those we lost in 2020. We're going to jump into television next on 720 WGN.
You're smiling. I like that. Let's take a look at your response. Did you come up with the right one? No? What is We Love You Out? That's very kind. Thank you. costs you $19.95. You're left with $5. Okay.
All right, it's Dave Plyer on 720 WGM. We're talking to Wally Podrazik. He's on the Team Hochberg phone line. And we're talking about those we lost in 2020. That was, you know, just some months ago when Alex Wally was on the show. And one of the contestants literally gave up his answer to say, "We love you, Alex," knowing that his diagnosis, stage four cancer, was pretty prevalent at that time. And it really did choke him up. And for everyone I've talked to, I've never interviewed him, but for those who have that I know, said he was just a sweet man.
Yes, and he, in a way, he explained that the way he approached Jeopardy, and he wasn't the first original host of Jeopardy, but no, he's the one who turned it into a cultural institution. He said, basically, it's not about me, it's about the show. But by taking that non-egocentric approach, he did make it about himself in that he defined the show. Maybe it was his Canadian heritage. I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe a little bit of that, too.
He was just such a classy guy making this, like, I would say, the perfect game show.
We're talking those we lost. We're in the category of television. Regis Philbin. So I have a quick Regis Philbin story. I mean, obviously, you know, big part of a Joey Bishop show, another good friend of Don Rickles who made his way up from local television to really a national superstar. When I was working at Montgomery Ward in the 1990s at their corporate office and marketing and merchandising and all that stuff, we had a contest called Who Wants to Win a Million, because it was all around his game show at the time. And I got to travel with him. We did a private jet, like a little small little jet that we would jet around the country, go to these stores. He would sign autographs and do his thing. I did that, I think, from 6 o'clock in the morning till midnight that night by the time we flew back into Chicago. We hit about 9 cities in one day. And his energy at midnight was amazing to me. And he was sweet to every person that came around. But what a talent.
Yeah, and in fact, if Regis were telling the story, he would do it like Regis had a really tough day today,
third person,
but enjoyed every minute of it. He had this unique style, referred to himself in the third person, and it just came across on screen. There are many people who are TV performers, and the reason they work on TV in particular is because you can immediately identify with them. The Regis and Kathy Lee, for instance, and succeeding co-host. It was all about this talking with Regis.
Yeah, just hanging out. Just hanging out, having a cup of coffee, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that worked so well for him. And he was very much respected and affectionately embraced.
Jerry Stiller, you know, spent so many years as part of the comedy duo Stiller and Mira with his wife Ann Mira, who he was married to, I think, for 60 years until her death in 2015, saw a late career resurgence in 93 as George Costanza's father on Seinfeld, of course. I mean, just legendary. And then again on King of Queens, you know, his career kept going. I've seen him in interviews, and he always thought he wasn't that funny. And he was probably the funniest guy in the room, right?
Yeah, and it's an example of how someone who has a rich history in improv, in interacting with another a lifelong partner or career-long partner, doesn't even realize how good he is.
How about a little Jerry Stiller and getting all pissed off about Kramer stopping short in Seinfeld? Let's take a listen.
Hi, Mr. Costanza. What's
Where's your friend, Kramer?
I don't know why.
Because I'm looking for him, that's why. He stopped short.
What do you mean?
In a car with my wife. He stopped short. You think I don't know what that's about? That's my old move. I used it on Estelle 40 years ago. I told everybody about it. Everybody knows. I stopped short.
Really? Stopping short? That's a good move.
You're not kidding. That's a good move.
Hey, Frank.
Don't frank me. I know what you did. How dare you stop short with my wife?
Come on, Frank, relax. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Think I don't know? Ass-man! To think I almost split the profits on the man's ear with you.
Bro.
Man's ear!
Bro!
Man's ear!
Oh, my God. I see it. I can see the whole scene in his leisure suit doing that whole thing. It's fantastic. Other TV, recently, David Lander, Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley, Tom Lester, Ebb. I know this is going to sound crazy. Ebb from Green Acres, the farmhand that helped Oliver Douglas and his wife. Ebb passed away as well. Fred Willard. What a incredible talent from, you know, really the 1970s. His partnership with Martin Mull, all the way to his last appearances in Modern Family on ABC.
Yeah, the thing about Fred Willard, and I'm glad you mentioned the Martin Mull, the Fernwood Tonight, Later America Tonight. He was incredibly skilled at being the so-called clueless straight man. But he was anything but clueless, and he had an impeccable sense of timing. And then when you go through all of his other appearances, whether it be like Waiting for Guffman or Spinal Tap, Best in Show, and as you mentioned, Modern Family and all, he brought something to whatever part he had. Even if it was a small part, you'd remember he did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Diana Rigg, Janet Dubois from Good Times, Robert Conrad, James Lipton. The reason we know so much about our favorite celebrities, we learned a lot from James Lipton.
He had the patience to say, I'm going to sit here and we're going to talk and you're going to tell me all the stories. And they did. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. We are talking to Wally Podrazik. We're talking about those we lost in 2020. We're going to talk about some newsworthy folks. We're going to talk movies. We're going to talk music and sports. All coming up next on 720 WGN.
Good evening. I'm Hugh Downs.
And I'm Barbara Walters. And this is 2020.
All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. We're talking to Wally Podrazik about those we lost in 2020. Now we're talking about some newsmakers, news behind the camera, in front of the camera. Hugh Downs, Wally, is, first of all, he spent his career here in Chicago. We met him about a decade ago when he helped open the museum and cut the ribbon. It was him, it was Betty White, it was John Mahoney. Began in live television in 1945 and here in Chicago. He moved to New York City. Did some syndicated programming. He was a game show host. He was a programmer. He was a music composer, which I didn't know in my research here, but a regular presence on television from the mid-1940s to 90s, and he held the certified Guinness World Record for the most hours on commercial network television until Regis, another guy who legend who died this year, surpassed him.
Yes, and part of why Hugh Downs was able to have so many hours on TV is he was at both ends of the day. That is, he had a long stint on the Today Show. Then, of course, it was on 2020. You mentioned all of the game shows and such. But I think the real secret of Hugh Downs is he was one of those perfect TV people where it was a firm, reassuring look you right in the eye and give you the straight scoop on the news. And those are the news people that are not super showy, but they're the ones that you want to turn to both on a daily basis and when something extraordinary is happening. That's the kind of personality that you're looking for. I would put Jim Lehrer, whom we also lost this year, in the same category. That is, he's someone who took news seriously, presentation of the news seriously. And as a sign of how respected he was repeatedly asked to moderate presidential debates. He notched 12 of them over his career.
Wow. Yeah, absolute legend. Phyllis George, groundbreaking in news.
Yeah, well, she was a woman, one of the first women to hold a TV sports anchoring position, the pre-show for the NFL. It was a woman can do this. Well, of course a woman could do this. A woman could do anything, and that would include sports.
Absolutely. There's one that really didn't fall into any specific category, maybe more television. He was more behind the scenes, but it's a man that I always found very fascinating because his career really touched every television network, and that is Fred Silverman. And he started here in Chicago running WGN television. You know, he's the one that brought Family Classics with Frasier Thomas to our homes every Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening. And then he worked at all three big networks. So CBS brought the shows All in the Family to the forefront. Mary Tyler Moore, MASH. When he got to ABC, he kind of pumped some life into Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, all those shows. And then went to NBC and then created that must-see Thursday night television and led with Hill Street Blues. I mean, you want to talk about somebody that made decades-long impact on television. It was absolutely Fred Silverman.
Yeah, and also after that, he went on to create such little, as a production person, such little programs as Matlock. So,
yeah, and Diagnosis Murder. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing to remember about Fred Silverman is that he understood television from a TV viewer's point of view as well as a programmer's point of view. He understood what made people want to tune in. Not from some magic Spengoolie. He just listened, watched, looked, and learned.
Yeah. He earned a bachelor's degree at Syracuse University, master's television and theater arts from Ohio State. His master thesis was a 406-page analysis of ABC's programming in the mid to late 1950s, which was not fabulous. So he was already picking things apart, figuring out his next move with that. And I will tell you, when I heard he passed away, I went to the Television Academy Arts and Sciences website, which the Museum of Broadcast Communications here in Chicago has some partnerships with our encyclopedias and their video content. And the interviews, it was one of the longest. I must have been an hour and a half. I sat and watched the whole thing. Of his career and how he made all the decisions to bring these shows to television. I mean, the biggest hits of really the 70s, 80s, and 90s that we all grew up with, or a generation grew up with, his mind just seemed like it was always working. I don't know. He's one of those guys I never understood how he could retire.
Well, and as right? I indicated, he really didn't retire for the longest time. I mean, after he finished his network stint, but yeah, he certainly he knew what made it tick, and maybe he finally learned how to relax.
Yeah, maybe he did. Maybe he did. We're talking about those we lost in 2020. We're going to hit movies next. Folks like Sean Connery, Chadwick Boseman, Kirk Douglas, Kelly Preston. A large list for movies, and we're going to do that coming up next on 720 WGN.
I admire your luck, Mr.
Bond. James Bond.
Mr. Bond, I suppose you wouldn't care to raise the limit?
I have no objections.
Proposez, madame, c'est illégal, monsieur.
Now.
C'est suivi, monsieur.
All right, it's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to Wally Podrazik. We're talking about those we lost in 2020. We're on to movies. Sean Connery, you know, it's funny. Sean Connery is probably my favorite Bond. Daniel Craig is right behind him. But, you know, when you talk about the movies, you talk about a true legend. You know, obviously James Bond was his starring role. The Untouchables, of course, here in Chicago and so many others. You know, when you think about just a really classy performer, it is Sean Connery.
Yes, and that's, he's an example of someone who was a movie star. And when you see him on the screen, he was big enough to fill it. And I don't mean big in a show-offy way. I mean, he really drew you in with his power. You mentioned The Untouchables, his famous explanation of how you successfully win a battle with the mob. He was Indiana Jones' dad, which was like probably the best of the Indiana Jones films. And one of my personal favorites was The Man Who Would Be King with Michael Caine. And in all of those, you see someone who you just love listening to and seeing on the screen. And by the way, my favorite Bond movie, of course, would be Goldfinger.
Of course, there you have it. And you talk about big movie stars, Olivia de Havilland, lived to 104. I mean, this is a absolute legend. Obviously, Gone with the Wind, but did so much more even in her personal life after her movie career.
Yeah, and during her movie career, she won a couple of Oscars as well, just not for Gone with the Wind. And she was praised for being an incredibly controlled performer on screen who could go from being gently wimpy almost to being she could grow on screen and be a powerful character by the end of the film.
Carol Arthur is another one from Blazing Saddles, also the actress and wife of Dom DeLuise. Wilford Brimley from Cocoon. You know, one of the youngest ones, and that's really hard. You know, when you talk about some of these people, we're talking 104. We'll talk about Kirk Douglas in a little bit, 103. They've had quite a life. Chadwick Boseman, kind of a tragedy, just as Kobe Bryant was.
Yeah, and you're right. That's an example of the other end of the number scale, where it's amazing how much Chadwick had done already in terms of character, iconic black cultural figures. You know, he'd been Jackie Robinson, James Brown, Thurgood Marshall. But just like Sean Connery had James Bond as his money role, the one that made everyone take notice of him, the Black Panther character for Chadwick, was definitely something that just introduced him to so many more other people.
Ben, our producer, wants to jump in. You know, you talked about Black Panther, the next one coming up. You got some...
Yeah, it's, as you know, he made that role larger than life. And after Disney's Investor Day on Wednesday, Marvel came out and announced yesterday that they will not be recasting his role for the next Black Panther movie.
Which certainly makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And a good tribute, a nice tribute to him as well. Kirk Douglas, you know, you talk about 103 years old, father Michael Douglas, almost 90 films, made his film debut in The Strange Love of Martha Ivers back in 1946. You know, his first nomination for the Academy Award was for Best Actor in 1949. You know, this guy was, I mean, he was one of the last surviving stars of the film industry's golden age.
The old Hollywood, so to speak.
Yeah.
And even in his later years, he had that star persona. I mean, if you saw him on a talk show and all, you could feel his presence. You could feel the respect that he still drew.
Actor, philanthropist, received 3 Academy Award nominations, Academy Honorary Award for Lifetime Achievement, of course, the Presidential Medal of Honor. As an author, he wrote 10 novels and memoirs. He's number 17 on the American Film Institute's list of the greatest male screen legends of classic Hollywood cinema, and it was the highest ranked living person on the list until his death. Barely survived a helicopter crash in 91 and then had a massive stroke in 1996 and a really debilitating one, and lived all the way to 103. So shows his strength in longevity. Here's a little clip of Kirk Douglas on Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. And here's a clip, of course, Johnny Carson airs on Antenna TV every night. And here's just a great little conversation between Kirk and Johnny Carson.
What's your best quality?
What's my best quality?
What do you think is your best quality as a person, not as an act?
Well, I don't know whether it's my best quality, but I found out a lot about me in writing this book. And what I found out is that I have a lot of anger in me. It's an angry book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm angry about things that happened many, many years ago when I was very poor. And I found that anger continues. And I think that anger that I express in that book that's within me, that people who make imitations, and you see Heath Gorsh, and you always see them getting that
anger.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that anger, in a sense, has been a lot of the fuel that has helped me in whatever I've done. I mean, I can see it expressed in a lot of movies that I've done. So anger has been a big part of my life, and it's always with me, and I think it'll always
will
be.
Most people wouldn't think that was a plus, but in your case, it probably was.
And it helped him. Yeah, sorry about that. Let me turn on my mic. Yeah, that obviously helped him in his career. But again, 103, lived almost, over, 20 years almost to the day that he had that massive stroke. On your list
Spartacus,
is Spartacus, of course. I didn't mention Spartacus. Ian Holm.
that would be sort of going the other way. It's like, here's a wonderful little character actor. I mean, that's Bilbo. And so you have this great affection for that performer for helping to make a beloved character in print come to life in film.
Kelly Preston. So here is Kelly Preston, another young actress, wife of John Travolta. Nobody really knew. They kept it very private that she was sick and dying from cancer, and just a lovely woman and a great actress from the 80s, 90s, and beyond.
Yeah, Jerry Maguire, Cat in the Hat. But I think you touched on every once in a while, the personal lives of the performers that we've come to think we know very well. Well, we know their public lives, but they do have everything that goes on when the camera stops rolling, and it's important to respect that as well.
One other thing that we lost in 2020 is the movie-going experience, and that is something, honestly, that I think so many people just love going to the cinema. Like, you know, I love going to the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge and some of the classics to go watch a movie. I mean, that, you know, even though, yeah, I can do it on my phone, I can stream it on my laptop, I can do it on my iPad. I get it. I watch movies like that, Netflix all the time. But once in a while, you want to get out of the house and you want to go have some popcorn for $50 and a drink, and you want to go have, but you want to go have a date night, or you want to go, you know, watch a great movie. And that's an experience that's somewhat lost. And hopefully we get back to that at some point.
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to point out, it's not just because you want to see the blockbusters, the ones that have all the explosions and special effects and all. Some of my favorite movie going experiences have been like Fred Astaire or Cary Grant movies, black and white from decades ago, that just have a sharp, crisp, immersive experience because they are bigger than life when they're on that screen.
Now, the one saving grace through all this in this last year has been the drive-in theater. So the McHenry drive-in is ours, and I was there a couple times this summer. I love that experience, and so do my kids. And I've been trying to introduce it to friends, and I bring them once in a while over the years, but this is the year that everybody was so pent up. How much safer can you get of bringing your own snacks, your drinks, and pulling up, turning on your car speaker, and watching a movie in some beautiful weather and just escaping for just a little bit?
What's funny is that probably about 5 minutes drive from my front door was one of those what we'll call it, a pop-up drive-in theater.
Yeah, yeah.
It's done in conjunction with the Music Box Theater. And went, wait.
Yeah, right?
5 blocks away.
Yeah, no. We even broke out a screen. I bought a screen. I bought a projector. The kids and I would watch movies in the backyard. I mean, from everything from, seriously, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, James Bond, Star Wars. We were doing that quite a bit from May until almost October. And put some chairs out and make some popcorn and light a fire, and it was just a great experience. But hopefully that experience lost will come back in 2021. All right, we got one more segment on this, and we're going to talk about music and sports, including Eddie Van Halen, John Prine, Kenny Rogers, Little Richard, Helen Reddy, and sports Kobe Bryant and Gale Sayers, the two big ones. We'll kick it off with part of my conversation. I spoke to Kenny Rogers just a few years ago. About his career. We'll talk, we'll play a little bit of that coming back from the news next.
Now, country music was your first love, but you obviously got into Ray Charles music, and I know you were first in a jazz group called the Bobby Doyle Three. What was, how did you get into that group?
Well, Bobby was blind, and he asked me to play bass in his jazz group, and I said, Bobby, I don't play bass, I play guitar.
Yeah.
And he said, there's more demand for bad bass players than bad guitar players, and I'll teach you how to play bass.
That's great.
And he did. I mean, he did. He taught me how to play. He was a lot like Ray Charles. He played piano like Ray. He sang like Ray. And then we'd flip a switch, and we'd do something jazz that was totally different and 10 times more difficult. But it was just that he sang, he had a great sense of humor, Bobby Doyle did. And we did some funny stuff. And it was just a great time in my life. And I felt like I grew exponentially in music. The things we did were so meaningful to me that it was an exciting, it was, you know, the best years and the most exciting years of my life.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
All right, it's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking about those we lost in 2020. That was my interview with Kenny Rogers from a few years ago, and we talked for almost an hour. He was just one of the most charming people. It was on his final tour. You know, he knew he wasn't in the best of shape, but this is a guy that he was really the voice of country music in the 70s to today.
And what was amazing is he's talking about the diversity of his experiences. I mean, I would go back to his first edition, just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in. In other words, yeah. Going from psychedelic to jazz to country, and definitely being a country icon of his era. So, yeah, an amazing career.
And so associated, too, with Dolly Parton. I mean, mm-hmm. all those albums that he did with her, and of course, you know, the holidays. Their Christmas album was one of the best selling Christmas albums of the 1980s and 90s.
Yeah, and he definitely had this, again, a great performer persona that carried over very well, not only on record, but obviously on TV, on the small screen.
Yeah.
And he pulled off The Gambler too. That was great.
Yeah, it was. Little Richard, dating back, I mean, we're talking the 1950s, just a really colorful character himself, but, you know, really a rock icon.
Yeah, and he, you know, he was a rock icon because all you had to do was ask him and he would tell you.
That's so true. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. But I mean, seriously,
he was. I mean, Paul McCartney, in terms of reaching, he was always reaching for the Little Richard voice when he would do some of his rockers. And he did a great version of Long Tall Sally. And McCartney's song, I'm Down, was basically, I want to do my own song doing Little Richard. So, yeah, he was definitely influential for generations of performers.
Eddie Van Halen, it's a big name, and it's a shocking name to a lot of fans, even myself, because, you know, you think about your youth and listening to that band in the 1980s and the 90s. And I never interviewed him, but I got to meet him when I was working. I worked for a company, I'm sure many of you will remember, the Musicland Group. So it was Musicland. It was Sam Goody. And I spent, you know, almost 12 years in the music business and a chunk of it in Minneapolis and in New York, just doing some of the promotional things, and got to meet him many times at conferences and conventions and in backstage at concerts. You know, maybe by the time I got to see him and talk to him in the early 1990s, he had toned it down just a little bit. But, you know, this is a guy that defined really true rock and roll in the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah, and it sounds like he was also, when you say toned it down, he definitely knew how to do the business part as well as delivering the goods on stage. I mean, if you're talking about let's have the sound of an Eddie Van Halen guitar riff, you go, yeah, I know what you mean. That's rock. That's rock.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even just looking at some of the, you know, his legacy and the songs that really are the soundtrack to an entire generation.
Yep. And I don't know how much time we have left, but I wanted to mention somebody who to me was also a soundtrack to a generation, and that was John Prine.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois guy. Who I was at the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2019. And I turned the corner, and it was like he was finally getting the recognition that those of us who in the Chicago area knew he was worthy of for decades, going back to the 70s. I turned the corner, and there on a huge screen is John Prine's face being interviewed. He's singing, he's talking. He said, yeah, he's now among the icons of country music, not again an honorary Grammy. And he was, Governor Pritzker named him the first Illinois Honorary Poet Laureate. And I think that's a well-deserved honor. I think it was Bob Dylan who was just saying Prine's lyrics are just, you don't know where they're going, but they're so authentic. They're so true.
Yeah.
You could see your life playing out in John Prine lyrics.
Well put. And here's another one from a whole different genre of music, but Helen Reddy. Helen Reddy was, you know, she hosted the Midnight Special. I remember that show on NBC like in the 1970s, but Bobby Darin Show, Carol Burnett, Muppet Show, Flip Wilson. But she made a name for herself singing, and she also acted, too.
Yeah, and actually, she was one of those, her I Am Woman release was just one of those capture the moment, capture the era upon its issuing, because that was in the midst of the push for the Equal Rights Amendment passing in the Senate, and somehow it was like she had the song that matched the era.
She retired back in the early 2000s, and although people wanted her to return to stage, because she was 78, she was not that old when she passed away, she said, no, my voice has deepened to such a lower key, I just can't sing my hits anymore. Like, just remember, just go buy my music. I'll be fine. just listen to my music. In the world of sports, Kobe Bryant, I mean, this was probably the most shocking one. It was on January 26th, so it was in the beginning of the year. And, you know, spent his entire 20-year career with the Lakers, obviously. 5 NBA championships, 18-time All-Star, 15-time member of the All-NBA team, 12-time member of the All-Defensive team, most valuable player, 2-time NBA Finals MVP. He also led the NBA in scoring twice and ranks 4th on the league's all-time regular season scoring and all-time postseason scoring hits. A legend of basketball.
Olympic gold medals. And the tragedy is it's an accident.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it was like one of those out of control. It just tore your heart out because it was he wasn't the only one in this helicopter crash. There are 7 others and his 13-year-old daughter. And that sort of takes us to the other end of that age spectrum, just like we lost Chadwick Boseman very early in a career. Yes, Kobe had a great career, but he had a great life ahead of him as well.
Gale Sayers spent 7 seasons with the Chicago Bears from 65 to 71. He was injured quite often, so it limited his play, but, you know, he was regarded by his peers as one of the most difficult players to tackle, but one of Chicago's very own.
Exactly. It was like watching a musical performance. When he was on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Wally, we talked about your book, Watching TV. Whoa, it'll make a great Christmas gift. Where do people find it?
Easiest thing is just hop on Amazon. I checked the other day, and they've got copies there. Watching TV, 8 Decades of American Television now in its third edition. If you go to MediaWally.com, I think the latest essay I have up there is I'm reflecting on 50 years ago of this year, Paul McCartney released his McCartney solo album. And that's appropriate to do a little review on because he has his McCartney 3 coming out next week.
I love that. Yeah, so, you've got a lot of Beatles books out there, too. Yeah. Wally Podrosik, thank you for hanging out with us for so long. Fascinating talking about all these legends. And happy holidays to you, my friend.
Happy holidays to you, sir.
All right. Thank you. All right. The folks from Anderson's Candy coming up to fill your stockings next on 720 WGN.